Well, thank you very much for the kind introduction and for the kind invitation to Toronto. Thank you all for coming. This is the first PowerPoint presentation of my life, and of course, it goes wrong. So mathematicians and PowerPoint, I think they're just not made to collaborate with each other. I'm a mathematician, and this is a mathematics research institute. And yet I was told that in this quantitative finance seminar, people would appreciate more quantitative presentations. So what I choose to present to you today is some highly non-mathematical work. It is very quantitative indeed, and it is joint work with a PhD student of mine, Gökhan Sibiroglu, who wanted to attend this presentation today because he's currently doing an internship in New York. The reason he could not come is that his visa expires tonight. So I couldn't quite convince him to hop on the last plane back to New York and then re-enter the U.S. before midnight. So he was a little too risk-averse to do this, and I fully understand. So he would have been my backup because he actually did most of the empirical work that I'm going to present to you. My second co-author is Mark DiBattista from Deutsche Bank's Global Market Equity Division. So what this is about, this talk, is hidden liquidity. Now, hidden liquidity is a very topical issue in both mathematical finance and in the financial industries these days. So I'm going to give you a brief overview over what are the different aspects about hidden liquidity. And the problem with hidden liquidity is it is hidden, and so you don't see it. And so since you don't see it, it's very hard to get your hands on some data that describe hidden liquidity. And you approach the exchanges for this kind of data, they are going to get back to you saying, well, you know, we're not going to give it to you because it's not in our client's interest. If we would give you our data on hidden liquidity, that wouldn't be hidden anymore. Fair enough. So we finally managed to get some data from NASDAQ, and we're trying to do our best we can with this data. So I will present to you a very simple model for the placement of iceberg orders. What exactly an iceberg order is, I'm going to explain later. And this model has basically two ingredients that need empirical analysis. One is the amount of hidden liquidity that you'll find in a limit order book, and the second is some kind of market impact coming from submitting large orders. So we're going to talk about statistical properties of hidden liquidities later, and then I'll show you some calibration results. So before we start talking about hidden liquidity, maybe a brief overview over what we're really talking about. We're talking at the end of the day about limit order books. So what is a limit order book? If you have bought stocks in the past, you go to your broker, that broker will ask you, are you going to place a limit order, are you going to place a market order? And if you choose to place a market order for the stock, let's say for IBM, that order is going to be executed at the best available price for you. Now suppose IBM trades at 100, but you're only ready to buy it for 98. At that moment, you'll not be able to execute that trade. So what's going to happen is the order is sent to an order book, and it sits there and just waits for the arrival of a matching order. Now, if you're sending big orders, then you can be sure that you're going to move the market. And as a result, what the exchanges offer to you is to shield some of your orders that you send from public view. So that may be that the orders are sitting in the order book, but only a part of the order is visible, and most of the order is not visible. This is where the name iceberg order comes from. Or some exchanges may actually allow you to send it to a completely different venue, which is completely dark, so-called dark pools. I'm going to give you an overview over that in a second. So once you've sent your order to a limit order book, orders are executed according to a certain set of priority rules, and usually it goes price priority, display, and time priority, so orders submitted at more competitive price levels are executed first. Orders at the same price level are executed according to display priority, which means visible liquidity has priority over hidden liquidity, and everything else being equal, first come, first serve. So time priority is the third priority rule. So I already mentioned these two aspects of hidden liquidity. and they are getting increasingly important. So the institutional investors have a real incentive of executing orders so that it's not visible from the public, just because if they go into the market, they leave a footprint. And as a result, they move the market may move against them, so they really want not to display their trading intentions openly. So they have various options. One option are so-called dark pools. A dark pool is an alternative trading venue which is attached to some primary venue, as for instance NYSE or London Stock Exchange, from which it takes the prices, but then it just invites orders, and whenever it's matching liquidity is available in the dark pool, this trade is just executed against this available liquidity on the other side of the book at a price that comes from the primary venue. So as a result, you can send large orders there with very, very limited market impact. So I'm not going to talk about dark pools today because they came a little bit under attack by the supervising agency to say, okay, what's the point? And all the big guys move to the dark pools, and what does it really mean for the informativeness of prices? I think it's a fair criticism. So what I'm going to talk to you instead about are iceberg orders. So iceberg orders are these orders which you send to a limit order book. Let's say you send them to NASDAQ, and you say, okay, I'm sending you 1,000 shares, but please hide 900. So you send it there, 100 are openly displayed, they are visible, and the hidden part, the 900, loses the time priority over the visible part. So it is always, when you talk about hidden liquidity, it is always a trade-off between increased uncertainty of execution and a reduction in market impact. So if you send your orders to a dark pool, since it's dark, you don't know whether a matching liquidity is available or not. So there's a lot of uncertainty about execution. On the other hand, if you get executed, then you have a much reduced market impact. There may or may not be minimal display sizes for iceberg orders. Typically, it depends on the price level. If you put it in the spread, then, of course, there's no minimal display size. Otherwise, you would narrow the spread. Some venues actually offer the service of so-called synthetic iceberg orders. A synthetic iceberg orders is an order where whenever the visible part is executed, automatically, it's done by the venue, automatically a new part of the iceberg order becomes visible. Now, as I said in my introductory remarks, talking about hidden liquidity is nice and good, and you can make nice mathematical models. But at the end of the day, when it comes to an empirical analysis, things get a little messy. There are almost no real-time data on hidden liquidity available. It's just it's hidden. So the exchanges are not going to allow you to see it. What you can try to do, but that's extremely difficult, you can try to reconcile trade and quote data. So how would you do this? You can look at your order book and you say, let's say at the best bid you have 1,000 shares. So now an order comes in size 2,000 shares. Now if that order comes in, it should move the price because there's only 1,000 shares sitting at the best bid. If these 2,000 shares order is not going to move the price, for sure it hit an iceberg. Okay? Now, problem is, even if you could perfectly reconcile trade and quote data, you would only be able to detect executed hidden liquidity. You would never see the available hidden liquidity, just the executed hidden liquidity. Second problem is that these information, quote and trade data, do not arrive at the same point in time. And that makes it almost impossible to detect hidden liquidity just from looking at quote and trade data. It's just this asynchronous arrival of information here, because it's reported by different agencies, and to match that is a major, major hazard. So instead, what we did, we approached NASDAQ, and they were kind enough to provide some data, not real time, of course, also not tick by tick data, but they provided us with 1 minute snapshot data of the entire order book. Now, 1 minute may sound like a relatively short period of time to you. It is not necessarily a short period of time in reality, where people just send orders, leave it in the order book. If it's not executed within, let's say, 500 milliseconds, they cancel. So 1 minute might actually be a long, a very, very long time horizon, but this is the best that we could get. So we got the entire S&P 500, and we got the data for November, December 2008. We could have gotten more, but this already, I don't know, but were terabytes of data, so it was certainly more than enough for me. So how does it look? Here is a typical sample snapshot from the order book. MSFT stands for Microsoft. And you see the time, so this is at the 11:51. Here you see the buy side of the order book, sell side of the order book, so you're looking five levels deep into the order book. You see the prices, so you see the best ask at 27.16, the best bid at 27.15, so notice there's no spread here. Spread is one tick, 1 cent. That's a fairly characteristic thing for Microsoft. Microsoft usually has very, very narrow spreads, very often a spread of zero. You see the visible orders standing at the various price levels. So at the best ask, we have 44,000 and something. Then we have 6,900 at the best bid. And what's interesting for us is this column here. So that's the available hidden liquidity. As you see, here on the best bid, you have roughly 7,000 visible and 37,000 hidden. So a considerable proportion of the liquidity here is actually hidden. And what you also see is that it kind of really, the order book is almost flat here on the sell side, and also here on the buy side. Why there's 5,000 hidden orders sitting here, five levels deep into the book, I don't know. My explanation is some intern pressed the wrong button, because that's for sure never going to get executed. Okay, so this is the data we worked with. We have this data for the entire S&P 500, but Microsoft for sure is a special case, and I'm going to talk more about this special case a little later. Okay, so here's our model. The model is extremely simple because the focus was not so much on mathematical techniques here, but really getting some model that has some predictive power. And the main question that we wanted to ask is, okay, suppose you're a big trader, you submit your iceberg orders, and the only quantity that you can control is the display size of your iceberg order. So you are sending an order of a given size at a given price level. So typically, here in this model, we look at an order which is submitted at the best bid or best ask, so right on top of the book, not deep into the book, top of the book or spread, but we focus on top of the book. And the only decision that our trader has to make is to say, okay, I want at any point in time so and so many displayed. That's the only variable. So now there's this trade-off between a reduction in market impact, if we hide more, and a loss in time priority from hiding our orders. And the optimization criterion is expected execution size. So that's what we want to maximize. The model does not have too many parameters. What goes into the model is the visible and the hidden liquidity in the order book, which has higher priority than the order that you send. So if you're sitting on top of the book, what has higher priority is the visible liquidity at the top of the book, the hidden liquidity in the spread. And if you not get an instant execution, the visible liquidity arriving at your price, of your submission price level, or at a more competitive price level before you actually get executed. The order arrival rates, either market or limit, are important. And some kind of market impact that we would like to model as well. Modeling market impact is tricky. What we choose to do is we choose to model the order arrival rates as functions of the market imbalance. By market imbalance, we mean the liquidity available on one side of the order book, the liquidity available at the other side of the order book. So typically, if this is balanced, then it's kind of some kind of a steady state. If there's an imbalance, then it tends to attract more liquidity, both limit and market orders. And you, if you with your order increase that that imbalance, then you have a market impact by doing that. Okay, so there's one picture missing here. So the model basically looks like this. It's a three-period model. So here's our order book with various price levels. That's the state of the order book here in blue. Dark blue means visible. So all the dark colors always mean visible. The light colors mean hidden. So here at this price level PJ, there sits a certain amount DJ of visible liquidity and a certain amount HJ, which is the light blue color of hidden liquidity. So this is your order here, submitted at this price level. Here is the display size delta, so that's the dark part of this order, and the light red part here of the order, that's your hidden part. So the total order size is N, the display size is delta, and this is the, in our model, the only quantity that you choose. So after your iceberg order has been arrived, it is the liquidity here is arranged according to our priority rule. So the visible part that has time priority over your part sits here. Then your visible part has priority over the hidden part that was already in the order book previously, and your visible part has the lowest priority. So here, as you can very clearly see, competitive limit orders arrive. They are green.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We might have
not. Oh yes, we should, because in that case you can even see the third picture.
Maybe.
I am very optimistic.
Just why don't you leave that there and we'll stick this in, and so there's three PDFs.
So okay.
Yeah. Well, it's a risk.
Okay. We have three of them. Can I choose the one of my...
The one that has the maximal.
Okay.
So there's... Do you want to just zip through it and see if it's got the picture?
Uh-huh. Here, you see how the sample snapshot really looks? Ha!
Okay.
Thank you, Tom. Fantastic.
So we just work on one
screen. We already make a big improvement here. So here's our competing sell orders that arrive. So we are sitting on the sell side of the order book. And again, it might be either visible or hidden, dark and light green. And we have the, since we are selling, we have the more competitive price levels to our left. And then they arrange here according to priorities, and then as a fourth step, the market order arrives and eats into the order book, and we are interested in the expected execution volume. So what can happen is that nothing is of our orders executed because it's too far away from the top of the book. It may happen that some part of the visible order here is executed. May happen that the entire order is executed. That is a random event. All right. So the order arrival rates we model as Poisson events, and actually we are saying that the size of the orders have an exponential distribution for the sake of simplicity, with a parameter which is called beta, and that parameter may depend on the amount that we show from our order. So delta is the display size. And all other arriving volume also has an exponential distribution for the sake of mathematical convenience. And these distributions, so both market orders and volume at more competitive price levels, for an exponential distribution which may also depend on this display size. And later for the calibrations, it depends on the display size, mostly through its impact on the market imbalance. The first mini result, which is obvious once you think about it, but it took us actually half an hour to understand it, is the relative discrete nature of the execution of an iceberg order. So it is typically so that either nothing happens or your visible part will be executed or the entire order will be executed. There's relatively little in between, but that's basically just because of the continuity that of the distribution with which we work. So that's not particularly interesting, let's just skip this. The model is simple yet convenient. It is convenient in the sense that the expected execution volume can be given in closed form. It's a formula like this. So I didn't put it on the screen, but in principle it can be given in closed form, and the model produces quite intuitive results. So for instance, it predicts that if your order is small, then you should just fully display it. Well, this is perfectly natural. If you have a small order, there's almost no impact, then why should you hide your intention, risking losing time priority? It makes no sense, so small order, full display. And then the more market impact you have, the less you should display, or this too is quite intuitive. So if you want to calibrate the model, we need basically an estimate of two things. So what is in the model here is the visible part that has higher priority than our visible part, what that we see. So that we can just take as an input parameter, that's not difficult. What we don't see is the hidden part. So we need an estimate for the hidden liquidity in the order book, which has priority over our hidden part. So there we need to get our hands on this, and we need the net order arrival rates to estimate the probability of execution. So these two quantities will be estimated using different data sets. The hidden liquidity as a function of whatever. So we want, at the end of the day, an explanatory variable. So what quantity do we have to look at in order to get a good idea what the amount of hidden liquidity really is? This is what we are going to estimate using these snapshot data from NASDAQ. The net order arrival rates, 1 minute snapshots, are not good to estimate order arrival rates. So the net order arrival rates, this we just estimate from regular order book data. So let me start with some statistical properties of hidden liquidity. So our question is focused on how much liquidity is either on top of the book or in the spread. Because our benchmark situation is we are posting our iceberg order at the top of the book. So what we need to know, how much hidden liquidity is there, how much hidden liquidity is in the spread, and how can we explain it? What macroscopic variables correlate most strongly with the amount of hidden liquidity? Can we estimate this properly? And can we estimate in particular the amount of hidden liquidity in the spread? And if there is hidden liquidity in the spread, where is it? So the practitioners told us, well, if there's hidden liquidity in the spread, then it's at the midpoint. Our analysis shows it's wrong. It's as close as possible to the book. So it's usually like at the first best increment into the spread, not at the midpoint. So here's just some sample statistics. The average ratio of posted hidden liquidity throughout the entire S&P 500. And as you see, well, for many stocks, it's between 8 to 12%, what is hidden. So over the entire S&P 500, about 15%, 17% is hidden. The situation looks a little different if we look at the average ratio of hidden liquidity at the top of the book. There we see that, let's say, 15% of the liquidity on top of the book is usually hidden. The first question that you may ask is, what about the spread? The spread is special. There's no visible liquidity in the spread. So what can we say about the probability of finding hidden liquidity in the spread? And it turns out that this depends very strongly on the spread. If you have a stock with a spread between 2 and 5 ticks, the spread is usually empty. So this is what this plot shows. Here we have the average spread normalized, so average spread minus 1 in ticks. And if we have an average spread between 2 and 5 ticks, you see that between 80, so each of these blue dots is one stock, between whatever, 60 and 90% of the times, you'll find an empty spread. The zero is a special case. So what does the zero mean? The zero means that typically there is no spread. So the average spread of 0.3 means, well, usually there's no spread, like in the Microsoft example that we saw at the beginning. But from time to time, there is a spread. And what this shows us is that for such stocks, if there is a spread, then you will find hidden liquidity with a very, very high probability. So we're only looking at one side of the book here. So you don't know whether it's buy or sell, but for stocks which have very tiny average spreads, as soon as there's a spread, somebody will or is very likely to submit hidden liquidity into the spread. So here's just a similar picture again. So the probability of finding an empty spread actually is quite high. Here's the summary. Averaged over the S&P 500, the spread is empty about 70% of the time. If you have small spreads, small average spreads, and if there is a spread, examples are Microsoft, eBay, Dell, then there's a fair chance that you find hidden liquidity, whether it's buy or sell. We're not making any predictions, but just there is hidden liquidity. If you have medium spreads, AMZN is Amazon, then it is typically empty. And if you have a larger spread, like for Google, okay, there's enough space, then again, you will find hidden liquidity with a relatively high probability. So what is a good predictor for the amount of hidden liquidity in the spread? What macroscopic variables correlate strongly with the hidden liquidity volume in the spread? So here are a few candidates: average spread, average price, ADV, average daily trading volume, and so on and so forth. So these are the canonical candidates that you could come up with. And it's not convincing. So we have a correlation of at best 0.47, and we would like to do better. So the hidden liquidity volume, so notice, volume, correlates not very strongly with either one of these quantities. Things get much better if you replace volume by ratio, the hidden liquidity ratio. So that means you look at the amount of hidden liquidity divided by the total amount of liquidity, visible plus hidden. You get a much better correlation. And here we see for this hidden liquidity ratio, the average spread correlates extremely highly with this quantity. So this suggests that the average spread, perhaps together with the average price, but we shall see that the average spread alone is already a very good predictor, the average spread should give you a good idea what the hidden liquidity ratio is. You have to look at the ratio, not at the volume. But if you know the ratio, I mean, you see the visible part in the order book, then you can from that easily deduct the volume. So if we do, so this is our regression model here for the hidden liquidity ratio. If we do a simple regression analysis, we find that the square root of the average spread is a good predictor for stocks with average spreads, and by this we mean, in general it's the square root. If we focus on stocks with smaller spreads between 5 and 10 cents, then actually a linear regression does an even better job, and the slope for this linear regression function can be determined using average daily trading volume. So the picture looks like this. So here's the average spread and the hidden liquidity ratio. And the reason why it's like a square root is because of all this stuff back here. So if we focus on something between whatever 2 and 6 or so, then I guess we see here that a linear regression function would also do a reasonably good job. So the message so far is depending a bit on the spread, but if you're looking 5, 6, 7 ticks, and you should look 5, 6, 7 ticks to have a sufficiently high probability of finding something in the spread in the first place, then you have this almost linear relationship between the hidden liquidity ratio and the average spread. So here's some more pictures. So I looked up what these stand for. So this is General Dynamics or something. This was the only company I knew. I never heard of these three. But what does these plots show us? So here's the relative spread, the prevailing relative spread relative to the average. So zero means right now the spread equals exactly the average. And now, depending on how the current spread relates to the average spread, we see that we have this almost linear relationship between the current spread and the hidden liquidity ratio. And this is actually a fairly consistent picture. So if you throw very illiquid stocks away, if you throw stocks with very narrow spreads away, where very narrow spreads are really tricky. So you focus on anywhere between 5, 6, 7 ticks. This picture is almost generic. So we did it for the entire S&P 500. So each stock got its own little linear thing here, and then this is how it looks. So it seems that, although it's not a law of nature, there seems to be strong evidence that the hidden liquidity ratio scales more or less linearly with the relative spread. So in order to determine the amount of hidden liquidity, what do you need? You need two quantities. You need average daily trading volume to know the slope. You need the current. You need the average spread. Okay, you need the current spread. That's what you see, and you need a visible part on top of the book. That's also something that you see. So from average daily trading volume and the average spread, you can fairly good predict the amount of hidden liquidity in the spread. Similar relation holds for the amount of hidden liquidity or the hidden liquidity ratio on top of the book. So assume now that there is hidden liquidity in the spread, then where do we find it? Okay. Well, common sense would be we find it at the first best increment. But interestingly enough, this is not what the practitioners told us. They told us, well, we usually ping the midpoint. But what this analysis shows is that pinging the midpoint is not the right thing to do. So here's the, on this axis, you see the concentration of the hidden liquidity on the first increment plotted against the average trade size. And if we look at stocks with an average trade size of 200 shares or more, then we see that almost 100% of the available hidden liquidity in the spread is concentrated at the first best price. It depends a little, of course, on the price. So if you have very, this is this plot here, if you have very cheap stocks, like average price under $10, then that usually has a very narrow spread in the first place. So there is no other place for the hidden liquidity to hide than at the first best increment. So this is no wonder that this concentrates up here. And then if you have stocks with high prices, then you usually have a relatively large spread. So then you'll find more, not just at the first best increment, but at further increments deeper into the spread. And this is why this picture here looks a little more dispersed. So if you want to take hidden liquidity, if it's there, you don't ping the midpoint. You look at the first best increment in the order book. No rule without exception. The exception is Google. And the reason is that the spread price ratio for Google is really, really high, so stepping deeper into the spread is relatively cheap. So I show you a few pictures here, hidden liquidity in the spread. So this is Amazon. So here is the buy side of the order book. So here's the best bid. Here's the sell side of the order book. So here's the best ask. And in between, that's the spread. And we see this U-shaped distribution. So we have an average spread of about 3 ticks for Amazon. And we see that most of the hidden liquidity in the spread on the buy side, on the buy side, is on the first best increment. Same holds true for the sell side. And there's relatively little deeper into the spread. And that's a relatively generic picture. So here's a similar situation for IBM. Has an average spread of 5 ticks. And again, we see that the hidden liquidity on the buy and sell side piles up at the first best increment. For Google, this picture is a little flatter. But even here, the lion's share of the hidden liquidity is one increment into the spread. So we have this U-shaped distribution of hidden liquidity in the spread, provided there is any hidden liquidity in the first place. So, little summary. So far, what have we seen? We have seen that the amount of hidden liquidity is the wrong thing to look at. You don't want to look at the amount of the liquidity, you want to look at the hidden liquidity ratio, and the hidden liquidity ratio is relatively well explained by average spreads plus average daily trading volume, and it correlates strongly with what is, that's top of the book already, okay, so I'm getting to that later, but the situation for top of the book is very, very similar to the situation hidden liquidity in the spread. So here's a correlation table, hidden liquidity volume this time at the top of the book, how it correlates with certain macroscopic variables. So in this case, the average trade size seems to be an okay indicator, as well as the average visible volume at top of the book and the inverse average price. ADV is not a quantity you may want to look at. We have the same kind of linear relation as before, so it doesn't really matter whether you look top of the book or spread, it's the same story. Hidden liquidity, given the time constraint, I probably skipped that. So let's move back to the model. So you will remember that for the model, we needed the amount of hidden liquidity with higher priority, and we needed the order arrival rates of market orders and sell orders with higher priority than our order. So these are the two things that we tried to calibrate and estimate from the data. So our calibration period is a two-week period. We finished this yesterday. So we didn't have the time to look at a really, really extended calibration period. So this is why we only took this two-week data, first 2 weeks, January of 2008. We looked at Apple. We submitted 2,000 shares at the top of the book, at the best bid or ask, as the pictures will correspond to the best bid. And the question that we ask is, what is the probability, or what is the expected execution volume after 2 seconds? So we put it there, count 1, 2, and we cancel whatever had not been executed. For Apple, we assume we have 300 shares at the top of the book. This is more or less the average that you have. And we tried in the first step to calibrate the order arrival rate as a function of the volume imbalance in our book. So plus one means essentially all the volume is on one side of the book. Negative one means all the volume is on the other side of the book. And surprise, surprise, zero means the two sides of the book are more or less equal. So what we see is that if we have a strong imbalance in our order book, so the plus one here means there's lots of imbalance at our side of the book where we submitted our order, then almost all the market orders arrive there. So market orders tend to follow the liquidity. So if there's lots of liquidity on one side, then the arrival intensity of market orders on that side is much higher. Somewhat surprisingly, at least for me, this also holds for limit orders. I would have said where maybe the limit orders arrive more frequently on the other side of the book so that we have a more balanced book, but this is not what the data show. The data show that we have more activity both in terms of market and limit orders where we have more liquidity in the book. Now, let's just ask ourselves, what are we going to expect? What should the outcome of this model be? What would we like to see, expect to see from this model? Well, for that, one thing is important. For a practitioner, the price itself is not really so important. What they look at is more like a relative price. They look at the spread. Now, if the spread is large, then they don't really care whether they put their order at the best bid or best ask, or whether they step like one tick into the book or two ticks into the book. So the spread to midpoint ratio for practitioners is extremely important. We will need this for in order to explain one of the results I'm going to show you in a small bit. So basically the result is this. If you have a small spread, then you fully display your order. Makes all the sense in the world. If there's a small spread, then usually the orders pile up at the best bid and best ask. So if you hide this, then you never get executed. You lose so much time priority, no chance. So small spread, full display. For medium and large spread, it really depends on where the order imbalance is, whether it's on your side or whether it's on the other side of your order book. If there is more liquidity on the opposite side of the order book, then you display your order. So you try to equalize the order book a little. If there is much more liquidity on your side, then you better hide. Why are you hiding if there is lots of liquidity on your side? Well, because the market tends to move away from you. So if you increase the imbalance even further, it will even it's even more likely to move away from you, and thereby you lower the probability of execution. This basically holds for both medium and large spreads, but the effects are amplified by the spread, and this is because if spread is wide, then it is relatively cheap for people to step into the spread with visibility liquidity. So this kind of the market moving away from you is more pronounced for large spread than for small spreads. So here is an execution profile for narrow spreads, and what we see here is the relative imbalance, the expected execution volume, and here into the wall the display size. And basically what comes out of this is that it's always highest here. So it goes, it increases from here to there, it increases from here to there. So for small spread, this is what I said, it's optimal to fully display your order, and also I find this very, very intuitive. For medium and large spreads, it's a little different. So here's the execution profile for larger spreads. Depending on where the relative imbalance is, either on your side or on the opposite side, it is either optimal to display everything or to display nothing. If the imbalance is on your side, the spread is really wide, then chances are people step in front of you if you display everything, so you're better off displaying nothing. If you're on the other side of the market, then you better display everything. This graph summarizes these findings. So here we have a red line on top of a blue line, which then on which we put a green line. So red line is small spreads, green is medium spreads, blue is large spreads, and we see that for small spreads, there's a red line beneath the green one here. It's always optimal to display everything. For medium spreads, there is a point here with this significant imbalance at your side where you start decreasing what you display. And if you have large spreads, it's a similar effect. There is a point where, again, you start decreasing what you show, but you start earlier. So this blue line starts here. So it's optimal to display everything, 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 everything up to a certain point. Now there's too much imbalance at your end, so now you decrease your visibility, and in the extreme case where all the liquidity is on your side, you are just hiding everything. Okay, so how am I doing with the time?
Well, I think you get a few more minutes.
I have one more slide. So this already brings me to my conclusion. What have we seen? Well, first thing I presented you was a simple model fit and liquidity. We then moved on to how can we estimate hidden liquidity? What are variables that give us information about the amount or the ratio of hidden liquidity, top of the book or spread? And what we found is that the hidden liquidity ratio in the spread is relatively well explained by the average spread or the relative spread plus the average daily trading volume. And we had some preliminary calibration results for Apple. So what's next? When the avenue is open for further research, most importantly, perhaps a somewhat more dynamic model. This model is static. Okay, the three-period model, state of the order book, we submit competing orders arrive, market orders arrive, we are finished. What perhaps we'd like to look at is a dynamic model which takes into account that many market practitioners submit hidden liquidity and cancel it shortly after if it's not executed. And by shortly after, I mean 5 milliseconds. Now, given the data that we have, we cannot address this question, not with this 1 minute snapshot. So this 1 minute snapshot is really, really coarse for many applications. If we do that, if we go down that path, then we really need to try to reconcile quote and trade data. It's going to be a nightmare, but for high frequency trading, this is definitely what we would have to do. Okay, if there are any further questions, I'm more than happy to take them. But thank you for your attention.